Sounds fantastic. What's this fantastic sound then? That's a kookaburra in a Hillman Minx colliding with a set of tubular bells. So what about this sound?
To compare.
Well, talking of cheaper car insurance, that's the sound telling millions of county drivers where to look.
It's where you go to insure your motor. Nothing quite compares to Go Compare.
Sounds fantastic.
Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
and welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Hey, it's good to be back. I know we took some time, about, what, 3 weeks? I think 3 weeks in a row we haven't been on the air here on Leaving the Ring. But I tell you what, it feels good to be back. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. I think the layoff that we did, though, really was a pretty good the timing was perfect, in my opinion. It was just because there wasn't a whole lot to really kind of discuss. And I think now with the announcement of Mr. Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, saying that he's going to be stepping in September, right? I believe it's September, he said here, Gabriel. September, right? That he's going to be stepping in with Kell Brook, the welterweight, undefeated welterweight in the UK. That's the big announcement here, right? The big news.
It's the big versus little news, I guess. Yeah, you could say.
Right. So we're going to get right let's get right into it. I think we should just get right into it. And, you know, we haven't been on. There's a lot of folks have been asking about us, like, where you know, what's going on? Where's Leaving the Ring? And I guess our opinion is needed. I think what we need to do is just balance everything out. You know, of course, we've been, you know, we get our occasional more than once emails saying that, you know, you guys just hate on everything. You shit on everything. Well, here's this. Triple G is the middleweight titleist for a very long time. He was after the green belt. That was the mission, right? The guy was trying to land on the moon, and that moon was the green belt with Gennady. And obviously Canelo dropped it, opt out to not face him in a September date, and decided to go back down to 154, which he's got a fight coming up with a UK fighter as well, Smith. So the rumor is that Tom Lawford can't seem to find a dancing partner in the middleweight division because Danny Jacobs is not available. Andy Lee, supposedly not available. Everybody down the list is in middleweight is not available for Triple G or are ducking Triple G. So the only one that's brave enough here, Gabriel, is Kell Brook. He's the only guy that is two weights south that's willing to climb the Everlast Mountain, which is Triple G, because nobody else seems to want to step in there with the monstrous force in the middleweight division, which is Triple G. So this is what we end up with. And again, you know, we're sitting here and we're scratching our heads and saying, what happened? Why do we get another gift that is practically packaged very nicely, but inside it's still shit? You know, and I've said this many times, you know, if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it probably is a duck. And this one is obviously a duck. And I'm not too happy about it. And I don't understand why. Where's the double? I mean, how come the double standard kicks in because of a fighter that you like? Why don't we have the same standards for all fighters? I mean, when Canelo had announced that he's going to fight Amir Khan, there was an uproar. And there was people, you know, crapping on it. They were saying this was a terrible fight, you know, cherry picking, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Triple G does almost the same thing. Now, here's the logic for some folks, though, which I thought was kind of comical, in my opinion. Kell Brook has never been stopped, you know, and he really can't make it. He really can't make the weight as a welterweight. So He's got to move up. Well, first off, Kell Brook has, I mean, he has the potential. I've always thought he had the potential to be a very dominant welterweight. But there wasn't any time there for him to show that he could be dominant. Because, you know, supposedly the weight is finally against him. He was supposed to face Jesse Vargas, which I thought was a great matchup. But instead he opted, and yeah, he is brave. That's pretty brave of him to jump up. But at the same time, he's swimming in untested water. And I don't understand how some people are going like, well, you know, it's a business move, and I'm happy with that, and I'm okay with this business move because, you know, I can see where Triple G is going. I mean, fight fans, you got to get something straight here. Are you a fan of the sport, or are you a business partner? I mean, are you getting a cut from this guy? Because the same people that criticize Floyd Mayweather, the fan, you know, you criticize the fans of Floyd Mayweather, well, you guys are doing the same shit. You're creating excuses for one guy because you like him. I get that. I understand that. I like Triple G too. But at the same time, I got to sit back and look and be rational about it and kind of understand the position, what he's trying to do, which is kind of bullshit. Because here's the facade that the mirage that these guys have put up, okay? Nobody wants to fight me. Everybody's ducked me. Now, granted that, I believe it's the fans that have kind of created this wall, that nobody wants to fight him. So we got to give him a pass, Gabriel. Got to give him a pass because nobody's available. You mean to tell me who was as mandatory was Dominic Wade, jumped up as soon as he was offered the fight, jumped up. He was a mandatory, right, and was given pretty good money, who is from the PBC, and decided to take that fight. We've seen Triple G fight guys that really don't have a name. But my understanding was he's the draw. He's the guy that can fill in the seats in the arenas. He's the dude that everybody is calling the Godzilla of the middleweight division. But yet he's got to get a smaller guy for a bigger venue. I mean, what happened to just allowing him to build himself? And for us to call what is a good fight and what is not a good fight. This is not a very good fight. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, like I said, I don't know exactly how well Kell Brook can perform at 160 because he's going to be facing it. Here's the thing. When guys say, well, he can't make 147, he's a lot bigger, so he's got to move up. Well, guys, yeah, that's absolutely right. But like most other welterweights, they're going in as a either junior middleweight or middleweight as themselves. Whereas he's going to be stepping in with Triple G September, facing a real middleweight who he's going to be trying to gain weight to get into that weight division. Whereas fight night comes along, Triple G, guess what, comes in at 170 to 175. So how does this make a good matchup? And some folks are like, it's a good matchup, but yet it's predictable. We know the outcome. So why are we clamming to watch these kind of fights then? Why are we okay with these kind of fights? If we know the prediction of it, why are we okay with it? Because another man has to make his money? Shit, last time I checked, he still gets a check when he fights because we pay to watch him. I don't get it. I just don't understand the double standards in boxing when it comes to fans and who they pick and choose is who's okay with one thing is not okay with the other thing. Canelo does it, he's chicken shit. Triple G does it, it's a business move. That makes no sense to me. I'm sorry. This is a crappy fight. You need to call it what it is. You know, same thing with Canelo facing Khan. Crappy, it's crappy. These are crappy moves. But this is something that you fight fans are allowing to happen because you guys are double standard. Same thing with, like, you know, Ortiz is a quitter, but Angulo isn't because you like him. You got to get your shit together, guys. You know, I mean, I'm tired of seeing people making excuses for fighters, and they're leveraging off of that. They're really leveraging off of everything that you're saying. You're telling me that Tom Lawford couldn't find anybody else in the middleweight division or north of the division? Get out of here. Stop being managers, stop being promoters, stop being negotiators for these guys. They do pay attention to what you're tweeting and what you put in on your Facebook and what you're talking about. They pay attention to it. So they already knew by making this deal with Kell Brook that you guys were going to make an excuse for him. So they didn't have to do anything by coming up with something, you know, a good logic behind their pick with Kell Brook. Because you did it already for them. Well, nobody wants to fight him. He needs the money. This is his way of fighting in the UK. Get out of here. I don't know what you got to say about it, Gabriel. I think I finished with my rant about it.
Well, we we talked about it at length, you know, on the next round. And it had been a few days thinking about it, and I'd kind of calmed down about it. I hadn't talked to you. And hearing how you feel about it, you know, it's valid. I mean, let's break it down in sections. And that here's this idea that no one will face Triple G. But is that to say that every offer went out, that they offered Demetrius Andre, who would be free in the fall, a shot to move up to 160? And now, if the goal was, let's fight a UK fight, I understand that. Now, you got Saunders. I think he might be coming back on the Golden Boy, the Liam Smith Canelo undercard. But he was coming back off of a hand injury that postponed his defense. So he actually would have been busy this year. Daniel Jacobs is in Bolivian at this point, although, you know, it was July 4th or 5th, somewhere in there, maybe a little bit before, but so some of the articles that came out around that time. It's already been announced for Jacobs that his career path is he's going to be the quote-unquote face
Brooklyn
of Brooklyn
face.
Boxing.
Right. Right.
He's got a belt. There's another guy at an interim weight belt. Who's like a number one contender nobody knows of. Nobody knows the guy's name. But Jacobs has got a clear path. He's going to fight more. Not even that crazy about it. If you read his last interview with the Ring, he says, "Look, you know, I don't see really the need for it, but you know, they're paying me good money, and this is what has been mandated." His guys are in a different universe, and you can't ignore that just because you want Triple G to fight certain fights or you like Triple G. You can't pretend that the sport's a sport when it's not. Triple G maneuvered himself into the position to go after the most lucrative guy, but also the most vulnerable guy in Canelo by going after that belt that Rubio had that was created because Martinez was injured and he and Cotto were discussing fighting, and the WBC wanted to make some money. So they did this interim fight or interim belt that Rubio wins.
Right.
Triple G gets that eventually. You know, we know the history. But here's some things. I mean, like with this offer, let's just say that everything was on the table. It wasn't just about going to the UK and establishing that audience. It sounds like the deal was made fairly easy, according to Eddie Hearn, that they were trying to work it out with Eubank Sr. He wanted all this crazy stuff. Eubank Jr. says he never even saw a contract, much less lost his pen. And they waited. They had a deadline of like 5 p.m., never heard from him. So instead of calling them to confirm that, apparently they calls Kell Brook, who's having trouble with the Vargas fight because Brexit altered how much the pound is going for these days. And so you've got money issues, and all of a sudden that fight doesn't work, but Kell's like, screw it, I'll take the chance for the money you're offering Eubank. That's how the fight gets made, according to Hearn. But what about pursuing Jacobs? He was the mandatory, well, at least that's what the WBA said. They said,
right.
Gilberto Mendoza said, look, if Canelo opts out, drops his belt, then we will mandate that Jacobs versus Triple G is next because they both have a belt, and let's clear this up. Well, that never happened. But there was also no offer made from, as far as I know, to Jacobs' side. And Jacobs, to his credit, he's been attributed with saying he wanted $10 million, but that was, I believe, Quillen. What Jacobs has said is, look, I got $1.5 million to beat Peter Quillen, who's a legit threat, or seemed to be. He was the favorite, and he knocked him out. I'm not going to get the same money to face Triple G, which HBO might be offering. Who knows? I mean, they had to go pay-per-view for the Mew, right?
Right.
I think that's reasonable for Danny Jacobs to want more money, more risk for more belts, higher profile, probably a pay-per-view fight. Everybody scoffs. There's this kind of, I don't know, racist element, for lack of a better term, or if it's Al Heyman or if it's Jacobs, there's this automatic side eye that's thrown at these guys. When Triple G has been legitimizing his title reign by picking up other belts, by winning, you know, title defenses, but not against anybody that's an absolute killer. The biggest puncher he's faced is Curtis Stevens.
Curtis Stevens,
probably the most legit threat. So it doesn't make sense to me that Jacobs would be called ducking, I guess, is long story short. Everybody else seems pretty busy. But what about the 54s? Were the legitimate offers made? Or is this just like Paul Williams taking the mantle of Antonio Margarito, who was trying to use it to get Floyd Mayweather in the ring, the quote-unquote most avoided man in boxing? Martinez used it too. Is it just marketing?
It's marketing. I mean, listen, I mean, back in maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I'm not really sure. This one was really Triple G wasn't even getting any notice. And Abel Sanchez was on leaving the ring, and he was like, hey, G can go from 154 to 160 to 168. It's not a problem. We'll fight anybody. But note that they've campaigned that, but they've never done that. And the only time they've ever even mentioned that is to face big names. They want to face big names. You know, at 154, they're willing to go there if it's Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather. 168, they're willing to go there if it's Andre Ward. But to reinsure us that they're willing to do that, they're not willing to take up tune-up fights. That's what gets me kind of heated up is that, okay, where the Triple G fans go, look, we don't want to see him fight Laura because Laura struggled with the Moderosian. We don't want to see him against Jacobs because Jacobs was dropped by Sergio Mora. But Kell Brook is a good fight. That's a good fight because we don't know what he could do at 160. We know he's going to get knocked out, but we don't know what he could do. Am I missing something here? I mean, the two other guys I just mentioned right now are actually guys that campaigned at a heavier weight. Where one guy hasn't even put his toe into that lake yet, but we're fine with that. We don't want to see other fights because the prediction is going to get KO'd. Even though the guy he's going to face now, the prediction is still he's going to get KO'd. But we're okay with it. It's just stupid. I just don't get that. You know, I don't argue with folks much. You know, going through emails, but I just go like, okay, I guess. I mean. You know what they say, man. There's that old saying, you know, you argue with somebody stupid long enough, you become one of them, you know. So I'll just leave it at that. I think it's just, like I said, I think in history, boxing fans have created things that now is really has spiraled out of control. Imagine this. If let's just say that Eric Morales and Antonio Barrera had the Twitter, the social media world involved, that fight probably would have never been made. Why? Because the people behind the closed doors, the people behind these fights would have saw everything and said, like, yeah, it doesn't look a fight. I mean, why risk that? Why risk our fighter for greatness? Let's not even do that. We wouldn't have seen certain fights. We wouldn't have seen a Diego Corrales versus Jose Luis Castillo because people would have shit on it before allowing it to happen. You know, I think there's fights that need to be made, whether you think it's good or not. In terms of the same division, you know, stop giving a guy a pass because you feel that he's, you know, he's in need to make money. You know, we got to, you know, let him make money. Let him do this. He's trying to establish himself like a superstar. Guys, we created that image with Canelo. Let's go back. Let's go back 3, 4 years ago, 5 years ago with Canelo. When Canelo was around and when he fought, Carlos Baldomir as well because he's young. He still needs to polish. He needs to get better. You know, he's a young guy. You know, you got to give him more time. He gets in there next for the 154 title, being labeled the youngest guy to win 154 above Fernando Vargas, who fought a legitimate guy, where Canelo fights Matthew Hatton. Fights Matthew Hatton and beats him, a guy that didn't even flirt at the 154, but that's what's given him. Well, you know, because he's got to get better. We got to give him that chance. We got to get him, you know, got to give him more fights. He didn't have an amateur background. He didn't even more fights. Josecito Lopez, well, he went tooth and nails with, Victor Ortiz, so he's definitely going to give him rounds, you know, so we got to allow that to happen. Shit, people made more excuses for these guys before anything that didn't leave any room for criticism. And if you criticize them, guess what? You were called a hater. So I guess at the end of the day, that's what I am, Gable. I'm a hater about what Triple G is doing and what his fans have kind of created, this wall that is impossible to jump up. I mean, Jesus Christ, put on the Donald Trump hat, guys. This wall you're creating is just unreal. You can't, I don't know, man. I guess I'm a real fight fan. That's just me. You know, where if if my favorite fighter is pulling some bull crap in front of me, I'm going to call him on it. That's what I do. I'm going to say, like, why are you fighting that guy? You know, why would you fight that guy? What service does that do for you?
What's interesting to me is the kind of framing that we've seen. It's like a direct comparison to Canelo. It just attacks that fight all over. This fight's better than that fight, Khan versus Canelo. What does that have to do with anything? It's still the same move. It's still an easy bag win. You know, I mean, the odds will tell you. I mean, I think Brooke is like 6-1 or 4-1, somewhere in there. And I think it's 6-1. And, you know, that's a fight where we already know who's going to win. Who wants to see that? I don't want to see that. I have no interest.
You know, when people want to talk about the business of boxing and they okay with the business that what Triple G is doing, because this is a business move. This is a money move, right? And then they get upset with Eubank Jr. and his dad did, which is give themselves a big price and ask for major demands. I mean, this guy, let's not forget, this is a prospect here. This guy really hasn't proven either. He's a real legitimate force in the middleweight division. He's still growing. So I don't blame these guys for countering Triple G in a brilliant business move by saying, hey, listen, we're going to fight you. We want this and this and that. Why not go out with a bang? Because it's a major gamble. You can't get mad at one and not get mad at the other. That makes no sense.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like when it's your guy, all of a sudden, everything's got to go his way. Everybody needs to get the hell out of the way. But here's a little bit of a double standard. Is that Triple G at this point is the A-side on HBO. He's their flagship guy.
Right.
I imagine that list is longer for him as to who they'll allow on the network. It's not like they're opposed to the A-sides winning, right? And fights where we know they're going to. I mean, look at Terrence Crawford's last couple, three fights. This is the first time he's taken a challenge in a while. And the same people that would say Martinez ducked Golovkin, you know, or they tell him, you know, too effing bad, you know, with HBO not televising Sebastian Zivic for you, so he loses his belt. But they let Chavez Jr. do it, and he gets to pick up that belt that Martinez conveniently loses in that move. I mean, this Martinez had already been on HBO several times, like at least four. But all of a sudden, he was supposed to go promote, in order to hang with his mandatory, an unknown guy who was a quality guy who I thought beat Chavez Jr. Steve did too, like sitting with me at ringside. That little double standard, I don't really understand. That Martinez was expected to behave in ways that were beyond his means, meaning, you know, his promoter was supposed to just take the guy off HBO, and they were going to promote their own Sebastian Zivic Martinez fight. And they ended up going to Argentina later on, but, you know, that was an older guy. Here you have Triple G, who's got a lot more leverage at this age.
A lot
more
leverage. HBO loves him.
Into his reign, yeah, than Martinez does. And yet, it's just everything is given a pass. Like, you know, I was talking about Triple G long before anybody else was. My friend Julian Kasdan scouted him for me. I've gone over that. And so, I mean, I've been on the bandwagon. And I like – we've had Abel Sanchez on here long before everybody was talking about Triple G. I remember talking to him in L.A. and he's like, I got this guy. I mean, like, we've been there. But this fight – I mean, it's not like the end of boxing. I don't need to sue anybody. I'm not crying. But – it's just like, don't be that, guys. We're going to be here with Triple G for a while. Don't be that double standard fan. Don't be that guy. Because, you know, what was not good for Martinez is all good for Triple G. You know, what's not good for Canelo, you know, Canelo can't look out for his career, but Triple G can and take advantage of boxing fans. I mean, people don't have to watch, but it is on your HBO subscription, right?
Look,
I guess you could do it.
Look, Big Drama Show tweeted out, Triple G's got 10 million reasons to go to the UK plus future income. Hey, then let's just call it what it is then. This is exactly what it is. It's a business move. But do we have
to
like it? Yeah, this is a money team thing, okay? So when Floyd does it, it's not a happy thing. But when the guy that you like does it, well, hey, we got to accept it. because, you know, we're going to get rich with them. No, we're not. All the people against the – this is from All Lives Matter. All the people against Triple G give us what the other options were. Who else out there are willing would I have been accepted? I don't know. I mean, you know, look, their names have been
– What about Curtside? Those two guys were available?
Curtside was not – Curtside was available, was actually – you know, I was told that was never offered. They never offered the fight. Laura, I heard there's another thing. A guy was never offered the fight. You know, so it goes back again. Like,
and Curtside is a guy that is would be an action fighter. He's actually, I think, the mandatory in the WBO, but he's in the top 10 of the other three sanctioning bodies. So legit contender. You know,
legit guy
to take on.
Listen, all lives matter. This you Big Drama Show answered your question.
Which is a
10 million,
by the way.
10 million. 10 million. That's what opt out any other options. Okay, so that really tells you that they weren't looking for other options. They were only looking for one. That's a big money. That's big money in their pocket. And that's what I mean.
Even the Eubank Jr. fight was a winnable. They're getting a prospect. That guy had no chance to win that fight. Maybe some athleticism and a lucky shot, but he was going to get knocked out too. Why was Triple G not as adamant in keeping the WBA to their word as he was to the WBC? Why didn't he behave the same way when the opponent is taller than him, has explosive power, is more athletic and speedy? Where was the offer to Jacobs? Same thing with, like, where was the offer to Martinez? How was that supposed to be possible that Triple G was supposed to, you know, be pulled out of obscurity by Martinez as he's heading into his pay-per-view years? Doesn't make any sense.
No,
just
makes
like
any sense.
The
doesn't
idea that
any
Danny Jacobs is ducking anybody when he's got a clear business plan doesn't make any sense. It's you know, I don't like the fight. I don't think it's as stinky as the Khan fight. But again, you know, like, you know, to do what you just said, to make excuses for Canelo, he's a younger guy, he's developing. And let's face it, when you have a guy that can sell out stadiums, and that's really all you've got besides a lot of prospects you hope will cross over at that point, what else are you going to do if you're Golden Boy? Why is it their business to build Triple G's business? Triple G is the one getting old, not anybody else. Well, they're getting older, but, you know, he's in his 30s.
Right.
Welcome to being Marvin Hagler and Bernard Hopkins. You wanted to be a middleweight great. Well, welcome to it. Here you go.
This is the struggle. 347-215-7598. Fight fans, you want to call in? Let's talk some boxing here. We're going to move on to Kovula. But before we do that, let's patch in on a fight fan really quick and see what they got to say about this situation. Area code 812, you're on live right now. Leaving the ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Dave and Gabe. It's your boy Joey, man. Dave,
what's up, Joey?
What's
how you doing, brother?
What's up, man? Hey, man, I was getting at you on Monday show, man. I told Steve and Gabe I was going to send Ray Donovan out to find you, man. I was getting worried about you, man. Man,
hey.
I was like, what's wrong with my boy going, man?
I know, man. No, man. You know, life, man, life and stuff like that. I wanted to do the show after with Porter and Thurman, man. I mean, you called it. It was a great fight. It was a really good fight.
Yeah,
I think people were, you know, crapping on it because of the whole, you know, it's behind PBC. And, you know, I think man, that's a whole other subject and stuff, you know. But so what's on your mind, man? What do you got? What do you got for us?
Yeah, just real quick. I'll touch on that real quick, and I'll get on to the current stuff. But I did enjoy, like I told Gabe and Steve, I did enjoy myself at the fight, man. It was one of them fights where it was just oohs and ahs, and I couldn't sit down, though. I kept jumping up and getting up and jumping up and sitting down. I mean, really enjoyed myself.
How was the overall card, Joey? Did it move at a good pace, or did you have to wait for fights? Like, you know, overall.
Well, you know me, I got there right when the first fight started. So I got there, and then the first two fights, it was moving along. And then I left and went to the bar for a little bit and watched. I pulled out my phone and watched the Joshua fight on my Showtime Anywhere app, because it was just it was a couple, like, you know, swing fights in the middle, and then I left again during the female. I think Christy Martin was fighting, so I got back when what's the guy was fighting, Benavidez. I came back and sat down when he started fighting. But I think the undercard, once that Marez fight got canceled, man, that kind of really put a damper on the undercard because it wasn't really too strong. But the co-feature to Thurman Porter was really good. But the fights were moving pretty good. And then Dave and Gabe, they did have a fight after the Thurman Porter, too. It was like a big heavyweight. That's, I think it was a Polish heavyweight. So it wasn't too bad, man. They showcased a lot of local fighters. But I wish they would have just had some more names that I'd known of. But like I said, I stepped aside and watched the Joshua fight for a little bit.
Right.
But going on, like I just tuned in here a little bit, guys. I know you guys, when I called in, you guys were talking about the you were comparing the Canelo Smith and the Golovkin and Brooke. I'm excited for Brooke for stepping up, taking this challenge, just like I was excited for Khan when he stepped up. You know, I just find it
right.
You know, it's bold doing it, but I admire the guys for trying to be great. You know, you're trying to be great. You just got to watch out for the safety concerns. But I think Brooke, man, like I said, he's tall dude. He's pretty big, and I'm always intrigued by the old has to go. You know, two undefeated fighters, that always catches my attention. They're both champions, so I'm looking forward to that, and I'm glad that it's on regular HBO. You know, because in the following week I got to cough up the money for the Canelo fight. So, you know, I'm starting to look. It's happening. There's nothing else I could do. I can't cry over spilled milk. So I'm trying to, you know, find ways to get into that fight. I'm trying to research some Liam Smith fights and see, you know, what I got to look for, man. He's boxing, man. Anything can happen. And then maybe they can put together. I wish they would throw that Kamagai rematch, Soto Carras on there, but I don't think that's going to happen. I know Ortiz is fighting on there. So, hey, man, it's boxing. You got to take the good with the bad, man, you know. But we got a good fall coming up and the end of the summer, man. So it's a good time to be a boxing fan, man.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I agree with you. You got to take in the good with the bad. But at the same time, you got to call out the bad. I don't think there's any problem. I mean, you go to work every day. You're putting in your 40 hours a week and plus, you know, you're doing what you got to do to provide, right? As a husband, father, or whatever position you're at and stuff. But so I think that you have every right because you're dishing out your hard earned money. And I think the power that we forget that we have is that our leverage is that, you know, if nobody's tuning in and nobody's showing up, they're not going to be able to get this purse. Okay. They're not able to get these demands that they're asking for because, you know, we're the guys. We're the ones that decide whether or not we're going to dish out our hard-earned money. So as me, as a consumer, I believe that I have the right to say, hey, listen, I'm going to accept what you're going to give me. But at the same time, I don't have to be happy about it. I got to call how I see it, which is, you know, this. I think you're absolutely – Kell Brook is a brave man. But do I tune in all the time to watch bravery? Or do I tune in to watch bravery and you know, equal ground competition? You know, that's where I want to watch. You know, I mean, look, Crawford and Postal is a fight that most folks are not even looking at, thinking about, and talking about. But when in terms of even grounds, these two guys are evenly matched. These two guys are in their prime. These two guys are undefeated. And guess what? They're in the same weight division. To me, that's intriguing. You know, when I go back and thinking about super fights, this is a super fight. In the 80s, this fight, those two guys would really have a lot of press, a lot of push behind fight fans because it's a real fight. It's like Andy Ward and Kobola. That's a real fight. Kell Brook, Triple G, that's a fight that we're like, okay, we're going to accept it because that's where we're at right now, you know, because that's where boxing has put us at. Or is it because that's where fans has put us at? I believe that's where fans have put us at because we have given too many excuses for our favorites to get away with certain things rather than pulling a card and saying, hey, man, what are you doing? I mean, I like you. I follow you. I think you're a great fighter, but I want you to challenge yourself. I want to see the challenge, you know, and that's what I really, truly, truly mean. See, I mean, look, Timothy Bradley's not a likable person throughout fight fans, which I can never understand why, but from the beginning, from the first time I saw this kid, I liked him. Why? Because he challenged himself. He never shied away for things. There was never anything really brought up you know, about why he wouldn't do this. I mean, the one thing that some people can criticize him about is the Amir Khan fight. But if you look at why he didn't take on that fight at that time, was because he didn't want to get locked in with a 7-fight deal with a promoter, Gary Shaw, who wasn't moving him anywhere, wasn't getting them fights, and wasn't even getting them the fights he was asking for that was going to challenge him that offered more money. So he did. He decided to opt out and do a real business move, whereas Triple G, he's doing a business move, but is it a risky business move?
$10 million. I agree with you, man.
It's solid, yeah. I mean, I understand. Look, I'm not going to knock his hustle. And I think that's what folks have to understand. I'm not going to knock his hustle. Listen, you know, you'll have to gain as much money as you can in that in the hurt business. You have to. I get that. But at the same time, I'm going to call what it is. I'm going to say, hey, listen, this whole nobody wants to fight me, you know, I'm the most avoidable guy. I mean, you know, that was the reason why Roy Jones – was getting, you know, crappy, giving us crappy fights, and everything was on pay-per-view, and everybody was fine with it. And, you know, we everybody was like, oh, he's fighting, cops and, you know, taxi guys or whatever. But, you know, we kind of laid that out. We kind of laid that map for certain fighters to jump around. I mean, Floyd Mayweather is notorious for it. We laid that map for them. So we're letting fighters get away with certain things that they shouldn't. You know, and I just think we need to call it out.
Yeah, Dave, I agree with you. I mean, this Postal Crawford, I mean, this fight's going to be big. I mean, that unification fight, I love everything about that. It's like a throwback fight, like you said, from the 80s. And then HBO did a great piece on Crawford. I just hope the fans can tune in. I really don't know the price yet of the pay-per-view. I'm already going to order it, but, I hope it's reasonably priced. And, I think what it is, too, what you said it, Dave, it's the fights. These promoters, they suck in fans like me. They know I'm going to pay. They, you know, I'm the kind that's going to pay for it regardless, and I can't help that. And I love the sport. I love the whole aspect of the event that I'm getting four live fights on TV, and I, you know, have some buddies over, have some drinks, and just talk shit about the old timers and the new and the up and comers. It's fun to me. It's like an event.
Absolutely.
It's the time I get to hang out with my wife and my friends. I look more of it as an event. But I know what you're talking about as they keep getting away with it, and you said it, man. I'm not that fan that calls out the BS when I see it. I guess I accept it and roll with the punches, man. But, you know, I respect you guys for your opinion on that, you know, and that's it, man. And have you touched on the Wilder-Areola fight yet?
Now, yeah, we're going to touch on that a little later. We're going to move on to the Kovalev thing situation. Hey,
okay.
Joe, thanks for calling in, brother, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Dave, real quick, man. You had me scared. I swear I was going to call Mickey Donovan. He was going to come get you, man. All right, you guys take care, man.
All right, brother. You too, man. Take care. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-205-7598. Like I said, listen, I'm not going to knock the hustle to Triple G, but I got to call it how I see it. And like I said, I don't know. Whatever.
Joe didn't miss me. He wasn't sending anybody help for me. Or I guess he knows I was around on the next round, but that kind of hurts a little
bit. Right. Yeah. You know, I'm with Joe in terms of, you know, I'm one of those guys. I'm just like Joe. I watch everything. I buy everything. I'm a fanatic. You know, I'm a fanatic. I mean, you walk into my office. I mean, everybody thinks I'm sometimes kind of nuts because that's the first thing I want to talk about is the sport of boxing. I want to talk boxing, you know, but I got to sit back and I just got to be a realist and say, hey, man, this is not okay. You know, I want to see the best fights. I went back on YouTube and I started watching old fights, you know. I started watching fights that were materialized. And fights that were really weren't under the radar because you know, matchmakers were willing to put in their guy in with another guy that supposedly two guys. I mean, and this is what I'm talking about, where I think this is where UFC, I'm sorry, I'm probably going all over the place, and it's probably because we haven't been on for quite some time.
You've had a little coffee. It's okay.
A little bit of coffee, a little Pepsi here and stuff. But this is what I mean. Look, I think the UFC has something above us. And what I mean by that is that they're willing to put in guys and mix everything up. It's like almost like the shuffle of the dominoes before they pass out the chips of who's going to have what. And I like the fact that they do that, that they understand that just because a guy lost his last fight doesn't mean he can't bring on another great fight, you know? And I think that's something that's really missed in boxing, you know, going back with Danny Jacobs here, he gets dropped by Sergio Mora right away. Guess what? He doesn't have a chance at all to be in with Triple G. Edson Lara, guess what? He struggled with Von Amadorosian, so he doesn't have a chance in hell with Triple G. But Kell Brook, who hasn't even had one single fight as a middleweight.
Seriously.
His fans are still saying he doesn't have a chance in hell, but they want to see it because of 10 million reasons.
Well, and there's going to be no doubt that Danny's going to probably make 1.5 thereabouts to fight Sergio Mora, who doesn't hit nearly as hard as Triple G. And it's true, he did drop him. What happened after that?
Right.
What happened after?
Jumped all over him.
You know,
had his ankle broken.
Jumped all over him.
Right after,
and
with
and
the
he,
pressure.
And I was watching that fight again. You watched it again, and I was like, all right, I want to watch it. And he comes rushing in. It's almost
a situation. Hands down.
He won't even be in with Triple G. You know, according to some people, where Triple G will be hurt in the corner and Danny will be approaching him and get caught. I mean, he might get Triple G's back to the ropes. I haven't really seen anybody do that, but that might happen. And he gets laid into. But it was like, it was a freak shot. And people want to just, you know, dismiss Danny because of Pirog. But then when Pirog gets brought up in regards to Triple G, well, Triple G gets credit for wanting to face that guy and almost facing him.
Right.
But he didn't. You know, it's like I don't understand the logic. And I always think our role is to be critical, you know, and not like movie critics, but like to keep things in perspective and to keep things middle of the road and honest. If it isn't, if people want to treat it like it's a sport and people are beholden to the top guy, that's a weird unwritten rule, don't you think? That like Triple G is streaking right now and he's kind of the favorite fighter of most people. Or a certain demographic of people. So everybody should do what that guy wants and what's best for that guy's career or best for boxing in relation to that guy. It was the same way with Floyd. Maybe it's because it was before social media, but I think people wanted Tito to give in to Oscar, but it was a different era. So it's hard to – but in this area of social media, it seems like – like anything Ward wants to get done, everybody just shits on it because he's got a personality that's not the greatest or whatever. But with Triple G, and even for some people, Canelo, whatever they do is fine. I don't really get that. Danny Garcia, he's actually faced some contemporaries. He gets shit on like crazy. I don't really understand it.
No, I don't get it either. Let's pass it to another fight fan here. Area code... 642, you're on live right now, Leave a Ring. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing good, brother. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Good. Gabe, it's Big Drama Show. How are you?
Hey, Big Drama. How you doing,
up,
brother?
Man?
Hey, how are you? Listen. Good show. Good show. I just want to say some things, all right? Because
go for it.
I respect you two guys, and you aren't part of the demographic. So when you say something against or on the other side of Triple G, I'm going to take note. You know,
go for it.
Look, this is my take. This is my take. All right. When I heard Kell Brook was fighting GG, I was shocked. Right.
Right.
I was a bit disappointed because I wanted Eubank. Do you know why I wanted Eubank? Because I wanted GG to really knock this guy out. Because I hate Eubank. So So when Eubank fell apart, I knew it fell apart. I was tweeting. It was falling apart because you could just tell the red flag come up, you know. But so when Kell Brook come up, I went, you know what? I'll take it because it's GG and I love the guy, right? Now,
right.
I'm a non-hugger. And what you're saying is exactly what I'm doing, and I actually admit that, right? But you know what was interesting? I'll tell you some stuff that's interesting, all right? The reason people love GG is because he's a son of a coal miner. He eats horse meat and drinks milk. That's how poor these guys are. And he's come up on the American stage, and he's won everyone's hearts, right? Another thing also, right, what you said about before, why couldn't he get this guy, why couldn't he get that guy, right? He's tried. On the 3-knockdown rule this morning, Steve Kim said Billy Joe Saunders was offered $4 million. Now, that's this time, not 1.5 years ago when he was offered $2 million. This time he was offered $4 million. And he said no. So the guy wants that fourth belt, but he can't get it. So what's he going to do? Now we go on to a different dynamic. American boxing is going to be finished in 3 years' time. I'm really sorry to say, but it is. It's going to be finished. You've got five Olympians going to the Rio Olympics. That's a red flag. You know what I mean? So, like, the English market has come up all of a sudden. So all of a sudden, Eddie Hearn goes, you know what? You know what? Eddie Hearn says, you know what? I can give you $10 million. Come to Cal Brook. After Cal Brook, you've got Erbank Jr., you've got Saunders, and you've got DeGale. That's $10, $20, $30 million. It's crazy for him to say, no, I don't want it now. You know what I mean? So that's where I can see it. But having said that, I totally agree with you about the fight. Totally agree. But you know what? This is another dynamic. We're hardcore fans, and we go on the American side, right? So when we know a shit fight, we know a shit fight. But you know, everyone from the UK, they're having sex over this fight. They're like, oh, my God, GG's coming over. You know? So,
well, for them, it's an event, right?
I totally understand what you're saying.
What do you think about Saunders passing? Like, you know, he did come off a hand injury, doesn't even get that first defense. Triple G would be his first defense, sort of like Lemieux. Do you blame him?
All right, okay. I do, but I don't blame him personally, right? I don't blame him personally because I think behind the scenes he's getting told, don't fight this guy because of blah, blah. And what that blah, blah is, I'm not sure. But I think he's basically – I don't really think he's pimping out the WBO belt. Because if you get offered $4 million for a belt, that's enough to fight for it. I think someone's telling him, hey, listen, you're not allowed to fight GG. Do you know what I mean? So
that's interesting. That's more so a traveler, right? Not to be, you know, not to racially profile a guy, but sometimes it's easier. But he's a traveler. And that's – I think what people don't understand is each boxer's a small business owner. That belt is his shingle. Why would you sell it? If you can hold on to it for a few fights and maybe that fight becomes worth something more, you maybe fight Daniel Jacobs, and, you know, that guy's been stopped before. Maybe you're the one to catch him. You drop Andy Lee, and you got two belts. Maybe there's more money in the pot. And Triple G's only getting older, and he's saying, hey, I'm staying at 160. Well, then he's going to be there. In some ways, he's kind of overplayed his hand in that regard.
Yeah.
So if I'm a young title holder, I'm not in a rush, and I'm unabashed about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that's where it comes into the whole, you know, like I said, it's the business move is for Triple G, which, hey, we understand that. I totally understand it. But then you have to respect the other business move the other guys are doing because they're looking at an outside aspect of saying, why face him now where I could lose this title or lose my position and not make the money work? That's why with the Eubank, when I saw a lot of folks shitting on him, I was like, this is a prospect still. He's still a prospect.
Sure.
And for the leverage that they kind of counted themselves out of, I understood what they were doing because they know exactly, like, this fight is just way too soon for us to even try to jump up and down. Their mouths got ahead of their asses when they started talking about Triple G.
Exactly. But you've got to look at it. You've got to also look at it like it wasn't Golovkin and K2 calling out Eubank. It was Eubank's calling out Golovkin. And they were going on mainstream television in the UK and Europe calling out Golovkin. And it fell through because of certain reasons, because of the old man. But, like, as I said this morning on the 3-knockdown rule, it was like, come on, this guy's been offered $4 million. And what's Golovkin going to do? And this is before the Eubank. Before Eubank, just like 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before, Loeffler was trying to negotiate with Saunders. $4 million, no go. All right, let's do Eubank. No go. All right, it's 8 weeks of September the 10th. HBO have got a date. It's 8 weeks exactly. We need someone in the. We need someone in 3 days, 4 days, because camp's going to start. Who have we got? Kell Brook. I tell you what, you fight Kell Brook, and then I'll get Eubank, and after Eubank, I'll get Saunders. If not Saunders, I'll get DeGale. Do you know what I mean? So now
yeah,
the business
I know exactly
comes,
what you're saying.
And
I
all
think...
of a sudden, and all of a sudden, dynamic moves. All see, this is the thing, right? All of a sudden, the dynamic moves away from the MGM and the Forum in LA, but all the way to London. So you know what's going
right.
to happen? The UK people are going to claim GGG. They're going to claim
right.
him. So what's going to happen? Oh, the Mexicans in LA and the guys, the hardcore fans in the MGM in New York are going to go against the UK guys. So God, my God, can you imagine the multinationals behind K2 saying, come on, do it, do it, do it, do it. So it's like, you know what? The pendulum is swinging. Go to the UK. It's about the pendulum.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
And this is my thing, just real quick, as a UK
yeah.
resident, I don't know where did you live, but Bob Arum bringing up the idea of Brexit altering things financially for Hearn. Buy or sell that?
No, I don't buy that at all. That was just no. That was look. That too. Vargas didn't want to go over there. He used the Brexit just to say, look. I think he just used that to say, look. This is the reason why it didn't turn out. Blah blah blah. But Vargas missed out on money for some reason that Top Rank didn't want to go over. But being diplomatic there. I think he was being diplomatic.
I think that was all about Pacquiao potentially wanting to come back. And Vargas has long been talked about. I think he was long been acquired by – wasn't he with – yeah, he's now with Top Rank. He was originally with Mayweather Promotions. But I think they got him as an option for Pacquiao. The matchmakers, I think, like what Jesse looks like. He's lanky and everything, but he likes to mix it up. He doesn't hit very hard. His last opponent may disagree with me, but he's just perfect for Pacquiao. So I think maybe that's why they pulled out of it. But go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
Thank you for calling. Okay.
Appreciate it, man.
No worries. I've got to go. Good show. I'll keep listening anyway.
All right, man.
See you guys. Ta-da.
Thanks for the call.
So, I think to sum it up, and what I was trying to say as well is that, look, I understand the whole UK move. I understand that's where the money's going to be at and stuff. So, what I'm saying is, stop creating something for Triple G by saying he's the most avoided guy. Nobody wants to fight him. Let's just be honest. He's looking for the UK money. Then, if he couldn't get it with Canelo, he's going to go where the obvious is, the UK. There's bigger money out there. And if it could be adopted by them, why not? Why not? You know? Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. It's still a crappy fight, though. You know? Let's go with area code 351. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Oh, what's up, guys? Long time, first time.
Hey, how you doing, brother? What can you do for you?
I'm cool, man. But by the way, this is Shane from Boston.
Hey, Shane, how you doing?
I've been following you guys for a long-ass time, man. Like, Gabe, thank you for not blocking me on Twitter.
You're welcome.
Steve Kim has blocked me for far less, so I appreciate it. And this is back when I was a Max Boxing subscriber, and you guys aren't providing the content. But
so
I'm not going to go into that. Yeah, right.
To steal from Steve. Did you get your T-shirt?
I did.
Subscriber?
I did.
Oh,
I got.
Like
I did. It was cool.
Right on. Huh. Yeah. Well, cool, man. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, man. But anyway, like, I get like, I'm not going to say hate because it's so played out and corny, but I get the reasons why people are talking negatively about this whole, you know, Kell Brook, Triple G fight. But let's be real. Like, this is the first time he's been in a fight that anyone really cares about. You know what I mean? Like, David Lemieux's like his toughest challenger at this point, man. You know? Like, and no one ever, like, you know what I mean? So, it's like, for now, it's
Cassim
a fight,
Uma,
man.
You know, like, those are top names on his resume. Guys
right.
who gave him what for. That Uma fight was pretty brutal. It might be still his toughest fight. You know, Stevens, I was there ringside. Stevens hit him pretty hard. He tested his chin, no doubt. But, yeah, Lemieux is probably as tough as it gets.
Right, and they're all like, they've all had, all his top opponents have had a very similar style. They've all been punchers who aren't as good of a puncher as he is. So, obviously,
right.
It's been a squash match. So, and even, I think it, I've been out of boxing for, and I'm still following you guys, obviously, and, but I haven't been following as closely. But, like, I've been studying for the bar and messing my mind up. I think Dominic Wade was the last dude he fought.
Fought,
who gave
right.
him some movement. Right. And I think it showed that, like, that's why I always thought Andre, and I love Triple G, but Andre Ward would box him up. And
right.
I think really, like, Kell Brook, he's not the slickest dude, but he can box a bit, and he can get in there. And I think he has a style. I mean, you take the weight out of the equation, and I think he's the toughest match. If they were the same size, this is far and away the toughest matchup Triple G's ever had.
Well, listen, if you take out the weight out as of the equation, then, yeah, this is a tough fight. But you can't take that out of it, you know, because
no,
this
you can't.
Is a
you
bigger
can't.
Guy. This, I mean, look, if Brook – who is the bigger guy stepping in against Sean Porter, was being pushed back and had to be cautious. What is that to tell us that what Triple G is going to be doing? He's going to be the pressure guy. So he's going to have to try to keep, Triple G humble and back and not willing to come forward and make these mistakes the way Porter did. And Porter's a much smaller man, you know?
Well, it's going to be interesting because, you know, Triple G, he comes in what, like, little over 170 on fight nights, pretty regularly. Nothing more
right.
than 175, to my knowledge. But, like, with this, he's going to have to do the, you know, he can't gain more than 10 pounds after the weigh-in because of the IBF regulation. That little tweak, he's going to have to change the way he makes weight or the way he replenishes or just the way he trains down. Because he fights fairly regular, so you know that, like, everything's in rhythm. He may, having to do a little bit more like that, he's going to have to give a little bit more. That, to me, is a question. But beyond that, he's just way bigger. He's already taller. He's got an inch reach, 70 inches to 69 inch.
How tall is Kell Brook?
5'9.5", I believe. He's listed at.
And Triple G is like, what, 5'10"? 5'11", maybe?
5'10". 5'10", 5'10.5" is what they list him as. I'd say he's 5'10".
Right. So it's not like the most – I don't think it's as dramatic as Amir Khan and Canelo, to be honest with you, even though that was a 155.
Khan has a certain fragility to him, right, that just never goes away. He's like a bird.
Yeah, he got knocked out at 140, I mean.
Yeah, you know, but delicate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't bother you? You like the fight? How do you see it X's and O's-wise? How do you see it playing out?
Well, I appreciate you asking me, Gabe. No, this show is awesome. I do think, with all that being said, as I'm defending the matchup here, I feel like I need to present Kell Brook as having a chance,
right.
But he doesn't.
Right,
he really
right.
doesn't. But I'm just comparing
right.
Kell Brook to everyone else he's fought, and it like just on a name basis. And this is from someone who triple like I've campaigned for Triple G, and he's getting older now. He's probably almost 35. It's like, well, like finally a name wants to fight him, and you got to give Kell Brook credit. And I don't, I think Triple G was in like six, but at least he's getting the big fights there. I would imagine it's going to be in probably the MEN in Manchester or something. It's gonna be sold out. It's gonna be the biggest fight that he's ever been a part of. And, you know, hopefully he fights someone after this. But you know what? I'm just glad. Kell Brook's going to get destroyed. I appreciate that he's willing to step up. And it's the biggest fight for Triple G. So I think it's the step in the right direction overall because Triple G's been knocking through these middleweight contenders we've never heard of, who never had a chance. And you know what? I'd rather have, like, a free show fight like this with a name than a middleweight contender on HBO, which nobody watches otherwise.
And
you know what I mean?
Chance as well.
This is the thing that I just don't. I mean, I understand the mission was to build. I mean, if you could have a big fight like this, it's kind of like playing a poker game or whatever. I'm not – actually, that analogy won't work because I'm terrible at poker. But somebody made an offer to you. How do you turn it down? Eddie Hearn calls back and says, I've got Kell Brook for your middleweight monster. what do you think? You know? Yeah, you do it. You pull the trigger. So
right.
You can't
blame
Triple G. It's not like he went fishing for Kell Brook. Kell Brook called.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, what else was his option? Like Chris Eubank Jr.? Like, come on.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, you know, maybe I should have this argument with Steve. But Steve will always hold Martinez to the, I want to fight the best, as the reason why he should have fought Gennady Golovkin at the end of his career to pass that torch. Well, Ludabella, I mean, going back just like a quick Google search, Kurtside, who's right after Chris Eubank in the IBF, Eubank is,
yes,
is 5, this guy's 6. He's right there, and he's right above David Lemieux, who's next, and above, you know, Sam Solomon, who's after that, Curtis Stevens, who's already fought. That dude has had a big win, he's on a roll, he's got a promoter that's calling out Triple G. Where's that fight? I mean, it's regular HBO. But this is also a voluntary defense, so they could fight whoever they want. I don't think the IBF mandatory is due because Turiano Johnson, the number one, is injured. So I think there's a bit of that. There's a lot that goes on and said about this stuff. So, oh, wow.
And
yeah,
it goes back as well. Like I said, look, it goes back to what I said. The UK money, is what they're after. In the beginning, it was the belt. Now it's this. The agenda is there. The layout of the agenda, what they want to do, was there. I think we need to stop pretending that nobody wants to fight them. It's not that. It's what they want to do. You know, it's just the same thing with the scenario of when Abel Sanchez and him used to say, hey, we could fight at 154, 160, and 168. But never said they were willing to fight prospects or up-and-comers in those divisions. They wanted to fight people with names, people that can bring money to the table. You can't blame them for that, but at the same time, you know, you got to see how what their agenda is all about. And I see it plain as day. I think we need to stop making excuses and saying, well, there's nobody there to fight them. Come on. There's always somebody
for sure,
there.
For sure.
For sure.
Dave,
you know what I mean?
I agree with you for sure. But I think that there's a lot of dudes who want to fight them, but I don't think Canelo's one of them. You know?
I don't think he's one of them at the moment. But it goes back to what I said about business. I mean, look, this move with Kell Brook is a business move, right? And people have accepted it, and people are defending it. So why can't we not accept the other guys in the middleweight division or below that division that are making business moves themselves to get them in position to get the most money they can by facing a monster?
Right. They're obviously waiting for Canelo to get his market share up, so to speak, and be more of a name, right? But Canelo wants to fight. Canelo will fight him. I'm not going to say Canelo will ever duck anyone, man. He fought Mayweather when he shouldn't have. He fought Lara, the toughest guy ever, really, in terms of like the amount of money you're going to get towards the difficult of how difficult of a style it is.
Right.
So maybe this Kell Brook fight will generate enough money with the UK audience. Maybe it makes so much money that Canelo's like, all right, let's fight now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So maybe it gets to us, get to the Canelo fight.
It just depends on how well the Liam Smith fight does. You know, I mean, if he still does 300,000 to 500,000 Canelo, he's fine. You know, and he doesn't really need Triple G.
Yeah, he doesn't need Triple G.
You know,
G.
He's being led by De La Hoya, who's taught by Bob Arum. You know, draw this shit out. Get the guy at the right time. And I think they just keep thinking time is on their side. Well, what's going to be interesting to see is like, all right, they just have the weirdest game plan. I don't buy that there really is a game plan. I think they just want to like go fight by fight and let the chips fall where they may. That's what's kind of great about this move with Brook Golovkin.
Well, David Lemieux, I think, proved to them
that
moves
him into a larger audience. You know?
Right. But I think, too, the David Lemieux move by putting him in with Triple G was a slap in the face and a hard lesson to learn in business was not to give up your guy so soon and so early for your first title defense. I think that's what they learned from. And they're like, hey, I want to do the same mistake. This is our only cash cow at this moment. The other guys are barely even building up their names. They're on Australia what, TV, right? You know? Anyway, hey, brother, thanks for calling in, man.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you guys, man. I'm going to keep listening and keep doing your thing.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks.
You. Peace. We're going to move on. We're going to move on for Triple G. We've been on that for about an hour here. I want to talk really, really quick because we only got about like 15, I think 20 more minutes here left on Leaving the Ring.
Oh, sweet
Kovalev,
yeah.
Sergey Kovalev had his win over Isaac Shabala, right? Shabala?
Chilimba.
I know there was somebody who was called Chilimba. Chilimba. And I got to tell you this. That to me, that was a good performance. You know, I know he's going to be critical of it, and I think other folks are going to be critical of it. But I'm going to tell you something about Kovalev, man, that I really, really like about this guy. Out of everybody out there right now at this moment, from Crawford, from Triple G, from Canelo, from anybody out there you could think of as a name, as for Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, Kovalev is the only guy that I've seen that's been matched in with so many different type of styles and looks in his fights. Here's a guy that understands he's going to be facing one of the toughest challenges of his career, a guy that's an Olympian, a gold medalist, a guy that won the six-man tournament, a guy that has his ego's ultra-high and his confidence ultra-high, and Andre Ward. So what he does is he puts in a guy that – I wouldn't say that it's a solid mirror of the style that Ward brings, but he did bring – movement. He did bring a jab. He brought something that made Kovalev look for, made him think, made him be a little bit step, make him take an extra step forward in what he would normally do, and wasn't allowed to do the things he's normally able to do, which is land that right hand repeatedly, shut down the guy within the three or four rounds, cut the ring off whenever he was willing to want to do it. Isaac was able to get in there and puzzle him for at least 5 to 6 rounds of the fight and made it very competitive, Gabriel. I thought, to me, that was a good performance in terms of regulating him of where he's at. Is he ready for an Andre Ward? And does Andre Ward, is it a confidence booster there for him to understand that he does have a big guy in front of him with a big punch? But with what Isaac was able to perform against him, left some holes there for Ward to scratch his head and say, you know what? I see what I can do to this guy. I see how I can stump him. I see what I can eliminate, and I see what I can capitalize against Kovalev.
You know, I didn't think he looked good, Kovalev. I mean, he didn't look terrible. You know, I'm not panicking or anything. It did make me kind of trust my instincts, you know? Like, I always liked, you know, when Ward was gone, I liked Kovalev a lot in that fight. And then he did what he did with Hopkins.
Right.
But let's be real. He's 50-year-old Hopkins. He'd been operating on, you know, the
Cherry
idea
picking.
That maybe he's still dangerous. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's been faking dudes out with his mystique for a long time. And Kovalev was like, yeah, guess what? You know, I'm a fucking badass. And I have a great
right.
chin. You're not
I'm a big
you know,
guy.
He called it. He was like, dude, as you would put it, I'm going to pull your card. Oh, you know, now I know what you really got. You're 50. And he made him do that. But he was respectful, and it was a great win. And you could really like Kovalev against Ward at that point. But now, you know, I've seen Ward. I'm not completely impressed with the idea that, you know, or I don't completely think he's fully back. But I liked some of the things I saw in that last fight and against Barrera. You know, there was, you know, he looked strong. Seeing him at the gym when he was at Conte's for that few minutes, he's bigger than I remember. He's a big guy, man. And I don't think, you know, people that are underestimating him in this fight, they're tripping. He's really dangerous in this fight. I can see him doing Kovalev like Hopkins did Tito. Really can.
I think that, you know what, the jab that Isaac was able to bring to that fight, jab to the stomach, jab to the head, which he did catch Kovalev when he would walk in. The difference between Ward's jab is that, you know, Isaac jabbed to try to keep Kovalev at a distance so that the right hand wouldn't be thrown as frequently, so that it wouldn't land as frequent as Kovalev would have wanted. The difference what I saw is that Ward, when he jabs to the stomach and he jabs to the head, he actually steps in with the jab. so that he's up and close to you to kind of smother your counterpunch so that he can counterpunch in the inside. Ward is a really good inside fighter, something that's not really given credit that he can do. And also given major credit to Coppola in terms of inside fighting as well. After the performance, I have to tell you that I liked what Coppola did. I like what Coppola did. I like the fact that he had to be more of a thinking man rather than muscle memory, you know, because like Tito Trinidad, when you brought him up, you know, Tito to me was a phenomenal technician, but a phenomenal technician with muscle memory. He had his three favorite punches and he would throw them. Well, Coppola doesn't have that muscle memory. He actually uses a lot of ring intelligence. He understands that if his right hand's not fitting in between the gloves, he's going to create an opening with an uppercut. When the guy decides to try to step back from him to create an opening to counterpunch, he jabs to kind of set him off balance. He, you know, to not give you that leverage over him. To me, I think that where the foot's in place between Ward and Coppola is what's going to make this fight the more telling. What I mean by that is that position. I think Roy Jones had said it perfectly. The position of foot, of the pace of who sets off first, is going to be the winner of the fight when Coppola was fighting on Monday evening. The same thing goes with Andre Ward. You know, Ward and Coppola, their balance, their position of where they put their feet at, that's going to be the winning point of how their punches are going to be thrown off. You know, how good are they able to close the distance between each other? How good are they is Ward going to be able to get underneath the punches of Coppola and frustrate him a little bit with his jab? I think that all comes into play. I think I told you this off the air when we were talking about it yesterday. I would not be surprised. I know a lot of folks are going, you're crazy. But I will not be surprised if Andre Ward would have the capability to drop Coppola in the mid rounds. Because the fact that feet position is everything. I think that Ward has really good footwork, great footwork. So does Coppola. But I think that the anxiety of trying to line that right hand is going to get him in trouble. And it's going to make him stumble over himself where he can get caught and he can get countered by Andre Ward. I'm still on the Coppola train, though. I like Coppola,
you know,
a whole lot. Go ahead.
We talk about Trinidad, you know. That's a smooth offense, though, and he's got all the punches.
Right.
You know, he's got the uppercut from either side. He's got a left hook that's really nice that comes after either a lead right hand or after, you know, a 1-2, and then it's the 3. Coppola is a little more awkward puncher. He's got a lot of different awkward shots, good footwork, but sometimes he can be off balance. He can overreach. I mean, it's one of those things where you don't panic if you're a Coppola guy. But it doesn't give you a whole hell of a lot of comfort, you know, and a whole hell of a lot of confidence. Watching it, this is exactly the kind of fight you want to have if you're Coppola.
Right.
You want to have like a tough dress rehearsal so that you can have the good main event. But either that or this is a precursor of things to come. You know, it'll be interesting to see how the bookies respond to, after Ward dispatches a brand or how he does that.
The thing too that I got away with, what I got from Coppola in this fight was the variety of punches that this guy creates. I mean, look, timing is everything. And if Ward is going to go in there believing he's going to be the counterpuncher and then he's got to time Coppola, that might be, I think to me, that's the mistake that he may be doing. I think for Ward, he wants to dictate the pace with his jab coming in forward, not do the opposite of what most of us expect him or expecting him to do, which is to travel backwards, suck Coppola in. Because timing him, I think it's a bit difficult here, Gabriel. I mean, this is a guy that throws a right hand, sometimes could lead with his right hand, sometimes leads with his jab, or sometimes leads with the jab and comes to the body. I mean, he caught Isaac with a beautiful body shot that was able to hurt him, that set up the right hand, and then the fight completely turned around. Ward has got to be aware of that. You know, he's not. It's not like Hopkins facing a memory, a muscle memory Trinidad, where you know that he only has these three variable punches that he's going to throw. Kovalev is a puzzle, and that puzzle is not really. It's not, you know, a 1-2-3 type of deal. The timing is going to be the footwork, and the timing to me is going to be who decides to come forward and who decides to be the aggressor with the jab.
Yeah, the jab is going to be key. It's going to be a race with that jab to the body. Both guys are going to be pressing the issue on that because they both love that punch. You know, I think it's a tough fight, man. You know, I just think
I love the fight.
It's towards advantage. You know, he. You
right.
know, if you look at it again in that Trinidad Hopkins analogy, when Tito was going through some pretty tough fights, that Vargas fight left a mark on Tito. You know,
mm-hmm.
and Hopkins, you know, he'd been there a while. He had a lot of mileage on him, but, you know, he's a sharp defensive fighter. He wasn't getting beat up. He wasn't getting in wars like that at that point. And, you know,
no.
it's about timing, you know, catching a guy. But, you know, we'll see. You know, I mean, I was, like, watching it and going, you know, Chalumba's awkward, and he's really making him work for it. And after six, I thought it pretty tight. It could be tied. It could be 4-2, Kovalev. It could be the other way. I mean, Chalumba was awkward and effective in that. But then the right hand lands, and he lands it, like, off balance, Kovalev. It was a thing of beauty. I mean, it's just,
you know,
he's got that awkwardness
right.
that works for him, you know?
I think Chalumba did something that we needed, which is make this fight a more credible, competitive specter. Because most folks would have thought that Kovalev was going to be the overbearing, too strong of a guy for Andre Ward, who, to me, Andre Ward hasn't really stepped up and test himself against other, you know, since the Super Six, hasn't really stepped out of that comfort zone of facing other guys. You know what I mean? That can challenge his style. This would be the first. So, to me, this is a super fight. But anyways, hey, just really quick, you know, I'd like to get your prediction here on Deontay Wilder and Chris Oriella for the WC heavyweight title, which is going to be on PBC, Fox, and Fox Deporte. Who do you got? Who are you picking and why?
I got Wilder like six rounds, maybe seven. I mean, it's hard to say. You know, if I haven't seen the training camp of Oriella. But, I mean, I'm just going by history. I've seen some of the video. He looks okay. But, I mean, that jab, he should, you know, Wilder should win the jabbing war. He should be able to win the straight right war. He's going to have to be on his P's and Q's. This is a guy in Oriola that, you know, came up fighting as a junior middleweight and is now, you know, fighting as heavyweight. So he has
right.
the mentality of a pure boxer with those combinations. Wilder is a guy that's learned at heavyweights. He's still kind of learning how to fight, how to be fluid, always have his balance and get back to the jab, all the little things that even though, you know, you don't think of Oriola as a Mr. Boxer, he takes for granted. So,
right.
you know, I just, it's hard for me to pick Chris in this fight, but I just think
right.
everything's on Wilder's side except for experience and technique, maybe, but we'll see.
You know, I think the thing I want to note and point out is that the Chris of the old, the Chris that would go to the drive-through at McDonald's and ordered a bunch of food and beer guzzle, anything that came his way, didn't take the sport that serious. To me, what's kind of sad to say, that version of him would have been the more dangerous version of him going in to face Deontay Wilder. Where this one, who's become a more disciplined guy, has become more of a fragile nightmare. You know, he's not really the Freddy Krueger that we once knew about. I hope that, though, that he's kind of settled in with this new body, you know, this new whole fact of being, you know, slimming down and controlling his weight and, you know, trying to satisfy the complainers out there because he didn't have the body type of a heavyweight that you know, we could recognize with, right? I hope that he's settled. I hope that's settled in. But that being said, the only way that I see that he can even be competitive in this is if he throws everything out the door, Gabriel, and he goes back to who he once was and just comes forward. But that coming forward is going to cost him with those right hands that Wilder likes to throw. He's going to get caught a lot. Can he absorb it? Can his body, his new body has shown he can't absorb the punishment that he once was able to have when he was a beer guzzler. You know, this new guy, it almost looks like a vegan type of body. He doesn't seem like he
seriously.
Can be able to take the broccoli thrown at him in his face. So I expect Wilder maybe having some trouble with the veteran Mexican-American fighter. But I think at the end of the day, I think the one punch that is going to be thrown and land is going to land and do the and it's going to do the not the unthinkable, but finally sealing the deal with Chris Oriella in terms of maybe following up in retirement would be the uppercut that Chris doesn't see while he comes forward. I think that's what does it, and I think I'm with you on it. I think six rounds, but if Chris can muster it up, if Chris' body is finally settled into his new body and is able to you know, he's got his legs underneath him and he's feeling more comfortable at his new weight, Deontay Wilder may be in a little longer of a night than expected and might even give you a little glimpse of what we remember of the nightmare on Saturday night. I'm hoping to expect that version of what I'm talking about than the second than the original one, which is, you know, gets caught with an uppercut, gets overwhelmed by a very big 6'7" fighter and gets his hit a lot. You know, Chris, there's no quit in Chris. You know, I think Chris is a true warrior. He's going to go out on his shield. But I'm pulling for him, man. I got to tell you, I've always been a Chris the Nightmare fan. I like him a lot. So I'm pulling for him. I'm hoping there's a little bit left of the nightmare in him. If not, there's going to be good night, Chris Oriella. Anyways, Fight Fans, thanks for calling in. It's going to be good night. It's night for Chris the Nightmare. Fight Fans, thanks for calling in. Every Wednesday, we're going to be back here on Leaving the Ring at 6 p.m. We apologize about our long layoff, but we're back. We're back
hey,
to
entitled to summer vacation, Dave. You know,
yeah.
We can take some time off.
Hey, we didn't. Right. Yeah, exactly.
You
know,
about the PPC?
I know. Hey, we didn't get a chance to talk about Mikey Garcia, but there's a lot of time. He's still got a couple of weeks. We'll talk about him next week. I know we didn't get into that. Fight Fans, you want to call in next time, 347-215-7598. Follow us here on Twitter. Don't forget, every Monday, you got the next round with Steve Kim and Mr. Gabriel Montoya. In the Square Circles on Tuesday with Felipe Leon. And every other Thursday, you got the two-minute round with Felipe Leon, David Avila, and the baby girl Reed. I think that's what they call it. And stuff. So again, hey, thanks for calling in. Thanks for tuning in. I hope I didn't upset too many Triple G fans here. And I look forward to speaking to everybody next week on Wednesday. This is your host, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Mr. Gabriel, have a fun night. Myself, I'm going to have a great night. Talk to you guys soon. Remember, don't drink and drive. We'll spill your beer.
Peace.
The family member who was concerned. The neighbor who felt uneasy. The teacher who was worried. The coach who noticed at practice. And you. Together, we can tackle child abuse. If you suspect child abuse, visit gov.uk/reportchildabuse to find out who to call.